A stranger's just a friend and or serial killer you haven't met. Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome back to the Nomad of Nowhere After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight we are talking about Season 1, Episode 5, The Kindness of Strangers. And on tonight's Rooster Teeth Reviews, we're going to be breaking down the episode talking about Shannon McCormick's other terrifying performance, the magic that might exist in the realm of nowhere, and we see what happens when Rooster Teeth decides to throw a horror movie at us. Stay tuned.
On this show.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hey there,
see,
everyone.
This is why he got confused, because we're starting with wrestling stuff.
Yeah, what other song were we going to play?
Dead Organ Dough.
Dead Organ Dough.
See, I had Grim Grinning Ghosts going, but...
The Undertaker.
I know. I'm aware.
Because we weren't dealing with ghosts.
You asked what other thing we would have started with, though. Grim Grinning Ghost, Ghost Rider in the Sky.
No, there are no ghosts in this episode.
I can't decide by Scissor Sisters.
Anyway, hi, everybody. Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome back to another episode of Rooster Teeth Reviews, the Nomad of Nowhere After Show. Let's go ahead and introduce our fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
I'm Mark B. Donica.
And to his left, Stacey Shuttleworth.
Hey, guys, I'm Stacey Shuttleworth.
And to her left, Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies.
And to my left.
Although we're back around over here, I'm Megan Salinas. Hey, everybody, we are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RTReviews. Both Mark and Katie have you guys covered on the live chat. Guys, let's go ahead and get into this episode. Thoughts?
A stranger is a serial killer you haven't met yet. You know they caught the,
Yes! Oh my gosh! Like, completely unrelated to this after show, but they caught a serial
killer.
They
caught the Golden State Killer today.
Yup. That's indeed a thing that happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that just a little bit of true crime.
Today in true crime.
But we're not talking about that serial killer. We are talking about the definite serial killer that is in this episode, because guys, a person doesn't just have handcuffs made of bones in their basement for no reason.
They don't?
Oh, there's
Are
a very
you sure?
definite.
God damn.
Wait,
it.
Do you guys have handcuffs Hold made on. Of bones?
I don't have a basement. Nicholas Brennan in chat says we could have started with spooky, scary skeletons.
That's also true. That's a thing that we could have done. So, guys, yeah, let's give some initial thoughts. Mark, last week you were very excited to talk about this week's episode. How are you feeling?
Exactly the same, actually. As much as I want to talk about this episode, I really want to talk about this episode. But we're not going to do that. And actually, just as a little bit of a tease, we do have an announcement about next week's episode that you should
but
stay
we'll
tuned
be talking
for.
About that at the end of this episode.
That's
so
what,
stick around.
That's what I was going to say.
Sorry.
This episode is that, I think this is the exact opposite of last week's episode. Last week's episode was supposed to be a pilot and so supposed to give you an idea of what the world was. This is the world that we've been getting for episodes 1 through 3. And this is a lot of the questions that we wanted to ask. And it's one of those things of, how do you get information out of a silent character? You have a terrifying personality. Color me shocked when I was like, oh, Shannon McCormick's playing a total creep. Call me surprised, but I absolutely loved that it was not just this character, but it was actually Shannon that was berating our nomad to get more rules of this world out of him without saying anything.
Yeah, Stacey.
Sometimes a barrage of questions is a really great thing. Which isn't a normal thing to say about shows, I suppose, but it worked so well in this episode, and we just needed it so much.
There's something to be said about a really good interrogation scene, for sure. Katie?
I don't think we've violently murdered any of the Nomad's friends quite like this since episode 1 when Mop Friend got it.
No.
So,
R.I.P.
this
Mop
was
Friend.
A thing. I loved Music Box Friend, and then he died. Horribly.
As did Pocket Watch Friend. It was pretty horrendous.
Horribly.
Yep.
It was a thing.
For me, this was definitely a dark but not unwelcome turning point. I always enjoy whenever anything that is non-horror related that I consume in my media turns into a horror movie.
You don't say.
almost as if I might have mentioned that I love horror movies like 80,000 times here at AfterBuzz TV.
Wait, do you?
Yeah, I know. I probably didn't mention that.
I hadn't noticed.
So I absolutely adore when something that's normally bright and colorful decides to dip its toes into, like, the horror realm. And in all honesty, I kind of feel like this is less dipping its toes and more like this is something that's always been a part of this world that we're only just now getting a glimpse of.
Yeah, we just pulled back the curtain on this, really.
Yeah, this is, you know, and that's something that's also not necessarily unheard of in the Western genre either. A lot of Old West stories are very dark and unrelenting stories about human nature and what happens on the outskirts of civilization, and how that affects people. So this is, again, this fits completely with this sort of story that Nomad has set up. It's surprising, but all in all, I hope they do more episodes like this, and maybe that makes me a bad person.
I'm sure they will. Given how many, well, we have bounty hunters for days, and then also I'm sure we also have serial killers for days.
Here so.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of fun with this episode, and really quickly, if you guys want to have fun and learn and grow in all areas of your life, if you do, we've got a podcast for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews, along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life, from health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more. Let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let Maria know that it was the Rooster Teeth Review Show that sent you there. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition, check it out. And seriously, guys, it really does mean a lot when you guys go and support the producers that give us this platform to talk about Rooster Teeth related content. It really does mean a lot when you go and support them, because we wouldn't be here without them.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
When you said you had fun with this episode, I think for me the best thing that came out of watching it with you was the part where the Nomad opens the coffin and sees that he's basically in hell, and you go, when you wake up, it's Seattle!
That is like a deep cut for any of you longtime Rooster Teeth fans.
Oh, it was beautiful.
It's a reference to one of the live-action shorts that they did years ago.
One that Shannon featured very heavily in, so
speaking of, I wanted to get your guys' take. What did you think of Shannon's performance in this episode?
That human being terrifies me. I know he's a good person in real life, and he is just the friendliest person you could ever hope to meet, but my God, I am scared of every single character he has voiced in Rooster Teeth animation. And also the vampire dentist.
He did play a vampire dentist once.
Yes.
Stacey?
There really isn't anything more terrifying, though, in characters. As someone who is very soft-spoken and sweet, but just absolutely maniacal and just hides this wild darkness below the surface, and he does it so well.
Serial killers.
He seemed like such a nice guy.
He had a cast on his arm, and he wanted help putting books in his car.
Jesus, Katie!
This is getting oddly specific.
Ted Bundy.
Yep. Mark, Shannon's performance.
To be perfectly honest, I thought that this one was going to be different, legitimately. I thought they were using the knowledge of Shannon, the characters that Shannon plays, to sort of keep you reticent and at bay. And it wasn't until he crushed the stopwatch that made me go, oh, okay, all right, this is a villain character. But ultimately, I liked how he played it, because even until the last time we see him absolutely losing his mind, it seemed like ultimately he may have the best intentions, but because he's a bit of a recluse, because he's dealing with death all the time, he doesn't know how to deal with people or magicians.
No.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I like that you thought...
You didn't realize he was a villain until after he had already beaten the nomad over the head with a shovel and locked him up in handcuffs literally made of hands?
Well, yeah, because
like,
he said...
None of that clued you in?
Because he said, sorry to have to do this. Like, he still kept that positive nature about him. I think also when it does come to the nomad... There's still this warrant out, you know. They just came face to face with two people looking for him. Just because somebody knocks you out with a shovel doesn't necessarily mean that they're a bad person. They could be a scared person.
Okay, but the cannibal chic decor in the basement—that's a little scary.
He's a touch peculiar, but I'm not here to judge somebody's peculiarities.
I worry about
he can't,
you.
He can't like hurt. A lot. He hurt. Worry about me when worry about her. But considering he deals with the dead. Whatever.
Usually if you have a dead person that you're supposed to be burying, you bury them intact. You don't take parts and then fashion household objects out of them because that's messed up.
Sure.
Or economical.
Changed my mind.
Utilitarian.
No, pretty hecked up. I believe that's called desecration.
I like what you're saying, Mark, in terms of like the expectation of him actually being cast against type, mm-hmm. because you bring up an excellent point. It is horrifying when we see bone hand, like literal handcuffs and a skull that he's talking to, but in his defense, the nomad was running from two bounty hunters, and if Toth does have a reputation for being the right hand of Don Paragon, and she might be pretty recognizable as such. So if you see the right hand of a nobleman chasing after this dude who hopped into your wagon, yeah, who, as Scout points out, is the last magical creature known on Earth, I feel like it's fair to take some precautions, especially if you... you don't know what rumors about this guy are true or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are so many rumors about how, as we find out later in the episode, about how, you know, this one guy was punched by his own mechanical arm nearly half to death, in a nice callback. And there are plenty of other rumors about the terrible things that the nomad does. In addition to the good things about him having a conscience and things like that, you don't know what to believe.
Literally using human body parts.
Cool, let's move furniture. On. we're spending a lot of time on this.
All right.
Yeah, that's my line in the sand.
So we get this introduction to Shannon, Shannon's character, the Undertaker, who has anime villain written all over him in terms of the visual aesthetic, but the voice is deceptive. And sure enough, after he helps the nomad escape from Toth and Scout, he takes him back to his place, knocks him out with a shovel, and then imprisons him. And what proceeds is an interrogation, in which, as you pointed out, Mark, when the character in question, who's being questioned, can't really respond, that makes for a very tense scene. That makes for a very tense setup. So, what did we learn from this interaction?
Well,
working through it. Go ahead.
Okay, I can go now. The theory that we had about him trying to bring the Earth back to life, dead in the water, so to speak. But I like that we're learning the rules of the powers, and if we're getting cool little dudes with or dudettes or not items with googly eyes and arms while it's happening, the performance of Shannon in this scene made you care about two characters that were just created. And that shows the depth of character that he provides as an actor, and also the depth of character that the writing team has has provided to us as viewers.
And also, it's a credit to the animation team as well, because, mm-hmm. like, you give a lot of personality to these two little inanimate objects that suddenly come to life. You know, just I think for me, the very humanizing moment was that expression on Pocket Watch's friend,
the expression on that creature's face when the Undertaker grabbed him a second after coming to life. Like, ooh, that was the moment where I'm like, okay, my skin's starting to crawl a little bit. Stacey?
Yeah, these little creations feel threatened, then something is very wrong. So one thing I really appreciate about this interrogation scene is we also, not only do we learn specifically about the Nomad's powers, but we learn a little bit more about the world in whole and kind of the past, and potentially we learn that necromancy was a thing.
Yeah!
So how many branches of magic do we have? And did people who practice magic, is it an all-encompassing thing? Were there certain branches that have all been, like, snuffed out now? Where do we go, you know?
Yeah, a very important word in that nobody practices necromancy anymore, which means necromancy was an established thing. It was an established practical magic, so to speak, that people actually studied and conceivably practiced.
There were books about it. It was a field.
Oh my gosh.
It was active.
I am waiting for the moment we get Western zombies in the show. Ugh. I'm just saying, if necromancy is an established thing, that's not out of the realm of possibility, Mark.
Okay, but shamblers or sprinters?
Yes.
Depends on how old the corpse is. Yeah, I'd like that we got a little more about the Yadala in this conversation, that they had a tradition, that they had a written tradition, and that it's pretty much lost now because we've lost almost all of the magic in the world. Like, I enjoyed that little bit of world building. And for the rest of it, I was just supremely creeped out by Shannon.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Now, Katie and I actually had a little bit of a discussion about something that is potentially problematic with that little bit of knowledge about the Yadala and their connection to magic. Now, it's sort of a problematic trope in a lot of media to take a member of a minority, I won't specify any given minority, but often with like Native American ones or African American ones, where you take one member of a minority and you make them the magical character because they happen to be a member of that minority. Now, that is a problematic trope in a lot of media. Do we think that this is an example of that? And I'm going to go ahead and say personally no, just because we still don't know as much about this world. I am throwing it out there as a point of discussion, though, because it is something that I feel like a lot of media should avoid, if at all possible. I don't know. What do you guys think?
It's a little worrying because the Yadala are the, if I'm remembering this correctly, they are the only distinct people of color that we've seen in this show. And immediately, and saying that, oh yeah, they're the people of color. And also they have this magical tradition, including necromancy, and it's ancient, and here's this guy trying to figure it out. I'm like, you're hitting all of these vibes that really start to worry me. And I don't think we have enough one way or another to say, oh yeah, they're doing this, or oh no, they're not really. But it's still just kind of like, okay, dangerous ground.
Is Redmanwell Yadala?
No.
That's a good point. I forgot about Red Menlo.
And the rest, there was only the one other member of the Daisies that was Yadala.
Yeah.
Right. And then, like, there's more brown people in this than white people.
The Yadala are people of color, and you can sort of look at them as distinctly with their pointed ears. That's sort of how you recognize them a little bit more.
They're the elves. They're dark elves, I guess, because of the necromancy.
It depends on whether or not there are lots of different types of magic out there, as Stacey pointed out.
Yeah, potentially maybe different groups of people, you know, specialize in different types of magic. And we've got that, you know, traditions coming from all over the place. We don't know.
And maybe it's the magic that makes them Yadala as opposed to how they look.
It's also possible that magic prior to this 100-year absence of it was more ubiquitous, that all peoples had access to magic, and it's just the Yadala that still talk about it because they are a marginalized group. Mm-hmm. I feel like it, like I said, I feel like it was worth discussing, but I have a lot of faith in the people behind the scenes at the show. I know that if they can avoid it, they don't like falling into those problematic tropes. No show is perfect, but I don't think that's something we have to worry about with this show. So, yeah, one of the things we learn is that the Nomad's magic does not seem to work on organic material. The fact that he couldn't bring bones to life was kind of a big deal. As the Undertaker points out, you can't restore life to that which life has left. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because one of our early theories was like, what if like one of his friends like gets hurt and dies, and then the Nomad goes clap clap, and then we were like, ah no, what could happen there? Are you guys relieved that that's no longer a possibility, at least as far as we can tell?
Until we bring back the necromancy, that is.
It seems like it's not necessarily all life, but definitely it might just be human life or it might be sentient life, because we had the flower in episode one and the mop was made of wood, and and wood has been alive.
Yeah, so, Katiana brought that up in chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes an interesting caveat. Kind of where is that line? Right now it seems human life is absolutely, you know, beyond that line. But with the flower, I guess we could argue the flower was living so he could give it sentience. But the wood, yeah, what do you do with that?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah, right here, Nika Zan says, not necessarily organic, but something that has had consciousness.
Which Ooh. Makes sense. Okay.
Which could then bring us back to the healing the world issue.
That is an excellent distinction.
A forest full of googly eyes.
I mean, that doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, but if it takes a turn, then you've got that scene in Snow White.
That sounds adorable. Googly globe.
Yep.
Just with arms and legs.
Yes! Oh my gosh!
We're going the Mogo route.
Oh, that's so adorable. Another interesting sort of thing about this scene is that, as we've seen in sort of prior episodes, the Nomad isn't quite fully aware of what he's capable of. He's, as far as we can tell, trying to bring the key to life, but he can't. And the magic has to go somewhere. And it's interesting that this wannabe necromancer is kind of getting to the heart of it, of like, oh, okay, your magic has to go somewhere. Like, and he brings up a lot of questions. And I have to ask the table, because this is something I asked myself while watching this episode. As the interrogation sort of escalates, do you guys go like, do we sound like that? Because we ask so many questions about that show. Is that what we sound like when we demand answers?
I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't generally have anyone chained up in my basement when I demand answers about a show, so I'm going to go with no.
See, and here's where the table split again.
I'm learning so much about you, and I am terrified.
I don't know if I can maintain that, like, amicable terror, though. Quite so well. I mean, just so kind and horrifying.
And it's usually only quiet if you put tape over their mouth. So just don't put the tape over the mouth, and then you can answer all the questions you want.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're going to kidnap someone, you have to be hospitable. You have to be a good host.
Yeah, you have to keep, like, a long straw, like, into a big old, like, bowl of water.
Yeah, exactly.
Bowls can hold more. Bowls can hold more.
Sincerely concerned.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Hey, I got Stacy between us. I have a buffer.
Do you?
Yes.
Or
drop a knowledge on him.
Or is Stacy like, bye.
Or is Stacy the one we need to worry about?
They're in tandem.
Guys. Come on, I would never. You know that.
All we're saying is we got some new stuff coming out on Inventory Full PT. That's all I'm really saying.
They're in tandem.
Twitch is looking for new IRL content. This will be real life.
We got something for them.
Something interactive, something immersive.
Keeps you on the edge
of your seat. If you die in the game, you die for real.
I just want to be true to the genre.
Specifically you. You will die. I'll be fine. So let's take a moment really quick to talk to you guys about iTunes.
That was the transition?
Murder and also iTunes.
Seems like
If you die on iTunes, you die for real.
You yes. die on the show, you yes. die for real.
How about anyway, we just not die?
Anyway, folks, we wanted to say thank you to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our aforementioned producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. And if you guys do leave a comment, you might even get a shout-out on the show.
You might. And these two people will. We got a 5-star review from Asia246222. Great times with great hosts. I love their Nomad of Nowhere recaps. That's how you can tell it's new. And I look forward to taking this journey with them. Aw. Come along on our little rodeo. Nope. Chuck Wagon of Dreams. That's what this
our
one is.
Our Oregon Trail.
O-R-G-A-N.
Come on, there's got to be trail. Something on the soundboard yes. for that. Come on.
Oh, no, he added new gross things. It's gross. No, we actually don't have that on there. What? But we did. There are a couple of memester things, but I don't know. The audio's not up, Steve. Try again. There you go. All right.
Oh, yay.
Okay. And we got another review from Trombone King 87, 5 stars. Thank you so much for this podcast. It is so great to have a place where the community can come together and talk about theories, aww. Predictions, headcanon, and ships. Looking at you, Mark, and I'm looking at you. The Rooster Team is always passionate, entertaining, knowledgeable, and engaged with their audience. It is so important to have a show like this where the fandom can geek out together and objectively review their favorite shows. The new weekly format is supremely appreciated. It was all caps, so I had to say it like that. With the huge slate of shows RT is coming out with this year. Thank you, Rooster Team. Thank you, Trombone King.
Thank you guys so much. I also want to give a quick shout out to Nate, aka GamerBoyNate17 on Twitter, who wrote us earlier today and said, just wanted to say, I listen to a lot of the podcasts from AfterBuzz, and you all are my favorite presenters. Love the Nomad of Nowhere reviews, and love Mark finally getting into shipping. Take care, all.
I don't know what getting into it is. Like, when we did the shipping episode, I said, oh, but when they write it into the show, I get it. They wrote it into the show.
It was a moment of clarity that we all got to be there with you for.
It was beautiful. So yeah, let's talk about another fun character. I really enjoyed the presence of Big Jib and Dead Medium Steve.
Was a presence though, even
pretty great.
I feel like Big Jib added a lot of much needed levity to what was becoming very, very dark and unsettling material. And Blaine just knocked it out of the park. It was just so fun.
Just the watching the Undertaker continue to make puns, and then Big Jib just, no, I got it. I just thought it was unprofessional.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just my brain ready for season 3, but I did see a lot of nerf in that character design.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a grown-up nerf.
Yeah.
Every character that Blaine voices is built like a fridge. Mm. And I mean...
Big fridge.
Blaine.
I want to know, like, who in Nowhere is using arrows right now? Who does that?
People who are really good with bows and arrows.
That's what happened to Medium Steve, is he got riddled with arrows. Who's shooting arrows out on the range?
Who's using...
Don't they have muskets?
Who's using axes?
That's fair. That's true. Gunpowder... I don't think we've seen a whole lot of pistols, actually, come to think of it.
I wonder if they're... I'm not sure we've seen any. I wonder if they might be more common by the Iron Border.
I always
because that's where the iron is.
Yeah, because we saw Trixie with her.
Yes, we did.
Yes,
because we had the bullets. Right. But as part of a traveling show, that you know, she could have come from far
literally
off,
anywhere.
It may not be a thing
and
in the local
yeah,
area.
Yeah, I think she's the only character we've seen with an actual gun.
Police Clap says Red Manuel had one.
Yep.
So I guess he's our Percival to Rolo for this world. I don't know.
Again, he could have been any. We haven't seen him use it. Maybe he doesn't have any bullets.
He just thinks it looks cool, and it's all about looking good.
It's a pop gun, and he just removed the little string and cork because it was messing with his image. I mean, we've only really seen Red Manuel get set on fire. We haven't seen him do much else.
Very important part of the team.
The fire guy.
The guy who needs a fire guy. Everyone needs a guy who ruins everything.
He's very he's very proud, but he's too insecure to admit it. So that's a good distinction, actually, talking about, and the one person we saw with a mechanical arm, you know, mentioned that he had to go all the way to the Iron Border to get it. So that's actually very interesting, and it probably explains why Toth is so reliant on knives, of all things. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, and I could absolutely see that being a thing. I mean, we've already seen water hoarded. Why not all the other resources, too?
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it explains this is a very sparse landscape. You know, oil and all those other reserves are very much on decline. Yeah, what's to say that, like, coal and other resources, other minerals aren't readily available as well?
Flint coal? Please continue.
yeah, it's interesting. Oh, man, I like that. So, Big Jib, he's a bounty hunter also looking for the Nomad and ran into other Nomads, and poor Medium Steve is now dead. Talking about, like, turning points, I also feel like this episode marked a turning point in terms of the types of violence that we're seeing. You know, it's one thing to go from an episode where a character gets shot out of a cannon in, like, a cartoonish sort of manner, slapsticky manner, and then we cut to this episode where the Undertaker repeatedly hits a larger man with a shovel. Mm-hmm. Like, for what, like, it was one thing when it was used to knock out the Nomad, like, we knew the Nomad was presumably going to be okay. I legitimately thought Big Jib was dead in this moment.
Or, like, lob credits.
And when they panned past again and he was still just laying,
he was like, still beating him!
It's like, oh my god. This shit just got real.
Like, someone just queue up stuck in the middle with you or something. Like, God.
There's a quote from The Simpsons that popped into my head. I just heard that little boy crying, stop it, he's already dead. But he wasn't. Yay! God.
But still, we all believed it. And it's, even though there wasn't any, like, blood or gore or anything for this, it's still incredibly violent. Especially for the level of violence that we've seen in this series so far. Like, our Gunslinger Showdown was an extendable arm.
Yeah. Just really quickly, there was one other gun. There was the shotgun at the end of this episode.
That's true! Yeah. Oh, yeah. That, which was also terrifying.
And I also, I don't think, I, just because this is a show about bounty hunters, and we've seen the bounty hunters get sent away after being beaten. I almost chose my words very poorly there. But the Big Jib and the rest of his group went off on their own. I think we'll see them again. Even in just like a bit part or in the background or something like that. If we ever go to one of the big cities or whatever happens next episode, we'll probably see them again.
Do you think they all have size modifiers in front of their name, like the like the Knack McFeagle?
I only hope so.
Well, somebody put earlier, there's Big Jib, Medium Steve, and Lil J.
Little John?
No, Jeremy from Achievement Hunter goes by Lil J.
I was thinking like not a Robin Hood reference.
Not quite as big as Big Jib.
No. Bigger Jib.
Slightly smaller Jib. Medium-sized Johansson.
Jib Jr.
I like the cut of his jib.
And tiny.
Just
tiny.
Just tiny, tiny. Tiny jib.
But yeah, so that moment, for me, I was just like, oh, we've hit a turning point in this show. We hit that a couple times in this episode. So the Nomad manages to escape, but he get with the help of Music Box Friend. And Mark, you pointed out before we went live how great the sound design with the music box
We've complimented them before, high sound team, but the design and the music has always kind of been around. This is a fresh beginning for the animation department in the terms of we don't have like a theme song or like a musical cue. We do a little bit, but you know, Red versus Blue always started out with sort of the jingle, the regular thing, whereas this is just a little something. And music hasn't necessarily been a huge part of the show. That, certainly not as much as it is Ruby or as like catchy or kitschy as it was in X-Ray and Vav or Camp Camp. But with as we've dubbed him, Music Box Friend, they affected the music when they were moving. They rolled and continued to make music, and it added to the score of the show and added extra tension and extra elevation of them going for the keys and then running around during Jib and all of their business. So I loved what Music Box Friend and what the design and what the sound team added with that character, and really making it three-dimensional without saying, hey, this character is going to be important for just this episode or whatever. But they designed the character with that in mind, and God, is that genius.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I especially love it, as you were pointing out, in terms of how it added to the tension, because there's nothing worse in a horror movie than relying on something that's constantly making noise when you need to be quiet.
Music Box Friends had no stealth check.
It can't. It's inherent in its design. It has to make noise.
Really quickly, you can get out of the chat, Revis. We don't want you here right now teasing us with all this business. Are you turning points and tone?
I actually want to point out something Eddie. A little earlier in the chat. Becca Durkin says, random thing, was curious about the flower on the book, appears to be a blue iris. Looked it up. Those flowers in Greek culture were placed on graves. The goddess Iris guided spirits to the afterlife. And then she also says, blue iris also means hope and faith in Victorian flower language.
Ooh. If it was a book on necromancy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is a beautiful detail.
Absolutely.
Quit messing with us, Eddie.
Stop it!
Everyone's just like, get out!
But with the death of Music Box Friend, we see...
That's the name of my autobiography.
the death of Music Box Friend.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold you to that. I need that.
It's like...
your memoirs are not called that.
Well, it's like Rosebud. You know, like, it's the entire thing is the search for what that was.
We are going to call you on it if you do not call your memoirs.
Call me in 30 years and see...
So, with the death of Music Box Friend, we also see something that we haven't seen as of yet in The Nomad, and that's an angry side, a dark side, which he, in one clap, brings just about every inanimate object in the house to life, to corner this now terrified man.
I'm a little surprised the house didn't just Baba Yaga it and grow legs.
I was sort of expecting that. Mm-hmm. But instead... Shannon's character gets overrun, and then we have the dramatic cut to just seeing the silhouetted shadow as he's screaming, I don't want to die. And I'm like, that is extremely horror movie, and it's what you do in like a PG-13 or a kids horror movie, where you cut away from the overt violence so that you can keep whatever rating you have. Yeah.
Or like in old cartoon, like action cartoons, where they would flash white whenever like a whenever punch somebody or contact got punched. Would be made. Yeah,
yeah. I do want to ask: at this moment, did you think that the Nomad had become a different character?
I thought a man was about to get murdered by a grandfather clock, that's for sure. Mm. Oof.
No, I kind of expected him to pull back at the end there. I didn't think he, at this point, is capable of going that far. And whether or not he was in the past, still very on the fence. Mm.
I don't think so. The thing that caught my attention more was shortly after when he snapped, and we... Whether it was directly the snap or just sort of a cue, he can clap off, but it's not a clap. So what other things can he do to make noise? What other things can he do to make noise with his body that have effect on objects like this?
Slapping his feet together,
or what do you call it with the spoons or yeah. stuff? Yeah. Yeah,
or he can make armpit noises.
Arm flatulation. I'm a big fan.
I do like that we got, like, earlier in the conversation, the what's their purpose? Are they here to protect you? And then we kind of saw the grandfather clock, like, nod to him and make sure everything was okay before they all returned to from whence they came, I suppose.
Yeah, it's interesting that we got a lot of answers in this episode, but there are a lot of questions that the Undertaker asks that we still don't have the answer to. Like, are they gone? Don't leave me alone with them!
Answers.
He will never have the answer to that question, and it will drive him crazier than he may already be.
He's just going to live in constant terror of everything around him. Like, that's almost worse than beating
like
him
Sid
down.
It's like Sid in Toy Story. Sid in Toy Story, but it's everything.
I would argue that this is more justified than what happened to Sid in Toy Story. Sid didn't know he was hurting sentient things.
That actually, Mal just brought up an interesting point as a part of the interrogation. The question is asked, are you protecting them or are they protecting you? Which I think brings up a very interesting idea because we talked about intent to clap, and what that does to the nature of the item, which it seemed like we got with the biggin. But that's a very interesting thing that's just going to gnaw on the back of my head for a little bit.
Yeah, well, because it seems like his emotional state when he claps has an effect.
Well, not just that, but them protecting him as opposed to the other way around.
Well, and for me, bringing them to life for a purpose makes sense. I keep coming back to the flower from episode one, and the purpose of the flower was, I'm giving you to this girl to make her happy. It wakes up long enough to walk over, make a friend, and settle in her hair, and then it's done. That's its purpose. It has completed it, and it is finished. So I'm wondering if, like, the rock friends last a good chunk of time, because their purpose is just hang out and keep me company. But all of these other larger objects, their purpose was kind of, hey, that guy, he's a problem.
That's actually a really good point, because what is it that that the Nomad was trying to do in terms of trying to bring the key to life? Presumably, come to life so you can get me out of here, out of these handcuffs. So when that magic goes to Pocket Watch Friend and Music Box Friend, that is then their purpose of like, well, we got to get him out of these handcuffs so we can get out of here. it's an interesting thought in terms of like you have a purpose to serve, whether that's keeping my loneliness at bay or if it's freeing me or if it's punching that guy until he gets out of town. It's interesting to think that that might be a big component of it.
And it goes back to the theory that the water wheel might be fulfilling its purpose in fixing the town or bringing water back to town, if we have any stock in the theory that it is making a riverbed and going to a body of water.
And to that point, though, that wasn't necessarily what the Nomad had in mind, right? When he brought it to life. So did the water wheel have an inherent purpose? Like, part of me wants to think about, did the furniture in that room witness him do unspeakable things and just act like a crazy human being and...
They're like, now that we're alive, we can punish you.
They wake up and they're like, all right, look, you have some warped ideas that we're not standing for it anymore.
Yeah, again, if he's got those already pre-made in his basement, no, it's probably not the first person who's had to sit there and listen to his terrible jokes. I do want to ask you guys what you think about the Nomad choosing to bury, if this was specifically a book just on necromancy, choosing to bury that with Music Box Friend.
Well, if it creates people like the necromancer, get rid of it. I can see that being a very simple thought of people who get their hands on this book, do that, so let's just not.
Yeah, it kind of begs the question of how much knowledge he has of the other magical branches, and if that's something that's familiar and it's past recollections of, no, this is dangerous, this needs to go underground and be put very far away, or if it was solely based on that encounter where, yeah, this doesn't sound like a good idea, we should just not even try to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Same, both.
Yeah, it is just such a shame because knowledge is so limited in terms of what magic is available in the world, and the fact that the Nomad doesn't know a ton about what he's capable of, it does seem to be a shame to bury a good chunk of knowledge just underneath the sand, but sometimes it's better not to know.
I mean, the idea of burying a book just hurts my heart in general.
Oh my wait, but there's things to learn. Like, what if you just want to know? You're not going to do anything with it.
But
you
just have to know. But you can't take that chance when it creates people like the Necromancer and the whole philosophy of, we have a responsibility to drag the dead back from beyond the veil and interrogate them. Like, in your cuffs made from their hands?
Sometimes dead is better.
Just anyway. Leaping off that slippery slope. Yeah.
The wrong nomad died.
Okay, I feel like that just about does it for this episode. Do we have any final thoughts before we move into some Rooster Teeth news?
I feel like this episode is best described as, boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand.
I would say don't talk to strangers, especially when they have anime villain written all over them.
Well, does anime exist in nowhere?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Question.
He's a stereotype without even realizing it.
He doesn't have a basis of comparison. They don't have anime.
Yeah, that's a discussion for a different time.
Stacey, any final... Oh, sorry. No, sorry.
No, it's a dumb joke.
I'm looking forward to next week. I haven't watched the episode yet, so...
Girl. I know. All right. Let's go ahead and talk about some Rooster Teeth news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
So, we got a release date for the next season of Camp Camp.
Yeah, we did.
Yay. Yeah, we
May
did.
May 23rd. We're getting season 3 of Camp Camp. It seems to be, on a previous show, we talked about how Red versus Blue is going to be longer episodes, but a shorter season. There's a lot. There's a lot that's going to be happening during the summer of animation, and we're almost there.
Yeah.
We're getting into May, so.
Guys, our schedule is going to be exhausted trying to cover all this stuff. We'll keep you posted in terms of our upcoming show schedules to kind of adhere to that. And also, Rooster Teeth put out a tweet earlier today with a Ruby announcement. They said, we've partnered with NHN Entertainment to create Ruby Amity Arena, a real-time strategic dual mobile game where you fight with and against Ruby's greatest heroes, villains, and creatures of Grimm. So, that's exciting. We don't really have any other details on sort of the nature of this mobile game. It just sounds like it's going to be a fun little fighter.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun. All right, we have an announcement of our own, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, so maybe we're a little bit quick to judge of kicking somebody out of chat. Next week, for the mid-season finale of Nomad of Nowhere, we are going to be joined by writer Eddie Rivas. He's going to be calling in and talk. Well, he said specifically he wants to hear our reactions first, and then about halfway during the show, he's going to call in. So, Eddie Rivas confirmed for next week. Please come by and join us. If you have questions for him, please leave. What's a good.
Put him in the hashtag.
Hashtag RTR Nomad, because RT Reviews is getting a little
crowded.
A little crowded with folks that aren't us. So RTR Nomad will be specifically four questions to Eddie Rivas. We'll try not to just say how dare the entire time, but we will ask as many questions as we deem appropriate. So let's get some good questions in there. So Mal. Cursing anyway, one of the things that used to define this show before it was the show was we used to get a lot of cast and crew members in to discuss, and the fact that the entire team, whether it's Al, hi Al, the sound team, hi sound team, or when it comes to writer here, Eddie Rivas, wanting to be involved with a conversation with not just us as fans, but you as fans and as viewers, and the community,
yeah.
Is tell something about the nature of the team working on this show. And we, just because we've been talking to Eddie about this appearance for a couple of weeks, doesn't mean that our affection towards the crew is like not as genuine, because as you know from this show for the past couple of years, we have a genuine appreciation for everybody over there in the RT animation department, and we'll be able to express that next Wednesday. So tell your friends, Eddie Rivas is going to be coming in, and during that episode we're going to have another announcement about future content, but I think we should wait until we're a little bit closer.
Yeah, let's hold on to that one for next week.
And the last thing I do want to say is that a post went up on the RT website about hosts for RTX. What an interesting post.
Indeed, it was. How about that?
Gesundheit. Well,
guys, I'm afraid we don't really have much time for predictions. We've been predicting a lot.
Well, so three of the four of us have seen episode six, so we're not necessarily fair.
So we're going to go ahead and hold off on that. So we just want to say thank you guys so much for tuning in. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to do one more thing from the chat regarding that conversation from Malachroma. Shout out to the RT Animation team for all their hard work. This cannot be an easy schedule to juggle, especially with Genlock on the horizon, so kudos to them.
Exactly.
Thank you for bottom lining that.
Yes, our sentiments exactly. Mm-hmm. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you want to see Megan's and my reaction to these episodes, they live on that YouTube channel.
As I'm Stacey Shuttlesworth, you can find me all over the web at Stacey Shuttles or on Twitch at InventoryFullPT. That's where we do our weekly video game variety show, essentially.
That's kind of what it is.
Monday at 6 p.m., so you can find us there. We're streaming throughout the week. I play all kinds of interesting things.
Our Monday night rage casts.
That's more accurate.
Are you not the Doki Doki yet?
No.
God of War just came out.
Yeah, I just ruined my credit by picking that up because people wouldn't stop bothering me about playing it. I also don't want to see spoilers. But make sure to check us out on Inventory Full PT. We've got some cool stuff coming up down the pipeline. Really excited this past Tuesday. It was yesterday. God, it's been a long day. I appeared on the Movie Trivia Schmodown on Collider. It was a title match for the Intergeekdom Championship between myself and Jason Inman. I am really proud of my performance as the character of the Enforcer, and I want to share that with you, so please go check it out if you want to see a fun, different version of myself. And then, fun for wrestling fans, I actually got booked for my first announcing gig. It's this group called NFG. You can find them on Twitter at NFGWR. They're pretty new. There's some sort of a show on Saturday that they're doing, like middle of the day, but they're live streaming it. So just follow me for more information or check them out on Twitter. I'll be in the ring, like announcing people to the stage.
That's
so
spectacular.
I'm really looking forward to it. Check them out, NFGWR. They still seem pretty fresh, but I would appreciate your support if you'd be so kind. And me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica.
Do
congratulations.
That. You can follow the whole team here at ABTV Rooster Team, and if you guys haven't already done so, please go. We have a Tee Public store with a couple shirts that are currently available, and guys, they are a lot of fun. Keep an eye on it. We're going to have more stuff a little later on down the way, and if you also haven't already done so, check out our scripted audio drama, Welcome to Vale. We're super proud of that series, and there's going to be more stuff coming on down the line at some point, so keep an eye on the ABTV Rooster Team Twitter handle for sort of updates on that. And I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I do lots of stuff. Just follow me there. Anyway, thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.